Next item, Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. The next item is item 31.
And we're going to have a short break, and then we will get right into 31. Folks, we're ready to resume. Agenda item 31. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for consideration of an individual conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for a timber harvest plan. This is the RMC site up above Davenport. And as Matt Thompson mentioned earlier today, he's our new senior engineer who supervises the unit that includes timber harvest. And giving the presentation today is our timber harvest staff person, Julia Dyer.
Thank you, Roger. Good afternoon, Chairman Young, members of the board. As Roger said, my name is Julia Dyer, and I'm an environmental scientist on staff here at the Central Coast Water Board. And I'm here today to present to you, for your consideration and approval, the proposed individual conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for the RMC 2006-2007 plan, which is a specific proposed timber harvest area in Santa Cruz County. I'll be referring to the plan throughout the remainder of this presentation as the RMC plan. RMC isn't a particular acronym that I know of. It's the abbreviation for the company that used to own this property. So just some clarification. So a majority of you have seen this eligibility criteria before, and this is the matrix that we use to evaluate timber harvest plans as they come through the office for the monitoring tier level. This matrix was adopted in July of 2005 as part of the general waiver, which plans categorized under tiers 1 through 3 are eligible for the general waiver, but as in the case with the RMC plan, it's a tier 4 plan, meaning that we need to consider it for individual waiver status. And just a quick overview of why this plan was elevated to a tier 4 status. Based on the three categories contained within the eligibility criteria, first we have the cumulative effects ratio, which measures the amount of timber harvested in a particular watershed over a 15-year period. For the RMC plan's watershed, the San Vicente Creek watershed, it's 39%, which is high. Then there's a drainage density index that considers the amount of water courses on the timber harvest area. That, too, was elevated or is categorized as high. And then there's a medium categorization for the soil disturbance factor, and that takes into account the amount of landings, which is the areas where the foresters stack logs before they're loaded onto the haul trucks, roads, water course crossings, and so forth. And just as another item to highlight, it says winter operations are not proposed, and to clarify, that means that they reserve the ability to fall trees outside of the water course and lake protection zone during the winter period when there's not saturated soil conditions, but any other types of operations are not available for the forester's use. So just a quick overview of what an individual conditional waiver means as opposed to a general waiver. We hold a water board hearing as we're doing right now. There's an opportunity for public testimony on the specific plan. I also am proposing site-specific conditions for the plan, where as opposed to the general waiver where there's already a predefined set of site-specific conditions. The predefined set of conditions, and through the individual waiver process, I'm able to also recommend some site-specific conditions. And I prioritize my inspection cycles towards the Tier 4 plans to make sure that management practices are protective of water quality. And the monitoring and reporting program is the same for the individual waiver as you would find in a general waiver. So just a quick overview of Santa Cruz County. We have the Pajaro River watershed outlined here, San Lorenzo River here, cities of Santa Cruz and Watsonville, and this triangular-shaped sub-watershed is the San Vicente Creek watershed where the RMC plan is. So just as a more focused-in view of the San Vicente Creek watershed, that same triangular-shaped watershed, what you're looking at here is a geographic information system or a GIS layer of the land uses in this watershed. And as you can see, there's quite a mix of land uses. The blue right here is the San Vicente Creek right along here. The dark green are forested areas. The lighter green is shrub and grassland, and the red areas are developed areas. So what you're looking at right here is Highway 1, the community of Davenport, and these are county and private roads all up and down the eastern portion of the watershed associated with the community of Bonnie Doon. Finally, this yellow dot represents the water intake for drinking water for the community of Davenport. Now, this next slide shows the footprint of the plan area, which is about a mile upstream of that drinking water intake. And these lines right here represent the tributaries that flow into the main stem of San Vicente Creek, which are associated with this plan area. In addition to the land uses I've already described, we also have off-road vehicle use in this land, in this watershed, quarry operations, as well as cattle and vineyard operations, defining our agricultural use in this watershed. So a closer view of the footprint of the watershed, and just to give you an idea of scale, the distance from this corner of the plan area down is about a mile and a half. This is a 535-acre plan. There are approximately 6.5 miles of watercourse associated with the plan. So those tributaries I was discussing before, we have one that flows along right here, and this is considered a Class 1 watercourse, which means that it's habitat for fish species for a portion or all of the year. We have this Class 2 drainage that flows along like this, and Class 2, as a quick reminder, is not habitat for fish species but for other aquatic life. And then we have numerous Class 3 watersheds that don't have habitat for aquatic life or fish but are capable of transporting sediment to the other watercourses they're connected to. The brown lines indicate the approximate 4 miles of roads associated with this plan, and I think it's important to identify that a majority of this road network is existing. There's about 800 feet of newly proposed road that's associated with a Class 1 watercourse crossing right in that area. We have about 2 miles of skid trail indicated in the orange, and again, skid trail are the areas where a tree will be fallen by the licensed timber operator and then pulled up to a haul road or a landing where they await loading onto a truck. And again, of these slightly under 2 miles of skid trails, about 300 feet is newly proposed. The rest is existing. There are 32 watercourse crossings associated with this plan, and again, a majority are existing. There's three that are proposed. That one right there that I was talking about at the Class 1, which is formerly a culvert crossing that they'll be upgrading to a bridge crossing. There's another Class 2 crossing and a Class 3 crossing. But again, the rest are existing.
Do you have any pictures, Julia?
Yes, I'll be getting to the pictures.
Thank you.
And the yellow dots represent 34 landings, again, five of which are new. So these are the existing landings in the 535-acre plan area. So again, getting to the photos, this is a photo of the proposed crossing of the Class 1. So there used to be a culvert here. This is the stream flowing along from left to right, and the bridge is proposed to be placed approximately in this location. And this is a photo I took in January of 2006 on my first inspection of this plan area. Another photo from my first inspection, this represents a segment of road, and I saw many locations during that first inspection where the roads were not being maintained properly. There's, as you can see, there's rutting in this road along the side here. I was very concerned about those conditions, and I spoke with the forester about that rutting because it is a potential to move sediment to a watercourse. I didn't see any evidence of direct discharge to a watercourse on that inspection, but again, these are the types of conditions that I look for and seek improvement upon. So on my next two inspections, so I've gone on a total of three inspections of this property over the last 2 years, and the next two inspections, I saw an improvement in the road network, and I believe that was as a result of my discussions with the forester. This photo I took on September 28th, 2007, so almost 2 years after that first inspection, and this is more representative of the roads as we see them today, which they're well drained and there isn't an evidence of rutting or anything of that sort. So as associated with the proposed individual waiver is a monitoring and reporting program, so I wanted to go over with you the proposed monitoring sites. So again, on those 4 miles of road, as with all the timber harvests within the Central Coast region, we require visual inspections of all the roads, and these are all, and please keep in mind that for visual turbidity and photo monitoring, those are all driven by storm events. So whenever there's a storm event of 2 inches or greater within a 24-hour period, the forester or the discharger, whoever they designate to do their monitoring, goes out, walks the roads, looking for issues like in that first photo I showed you where there was rutting on the road, and they would take immediate action to correct that, whatever that action might be for the associated issue that they find. So full visual inspection of the roads, and then, excuse me, dry throat. 2 temperature monitoring locations here and here. I discussed this with the forester, Gary Paul, and we decided that this would be a good location for the upstream turbidity monitoring, temperature monitoring. And temperature monitoring is conducted over the summer, and they place these monitoring devices in the creek that collect temperature data on an hourly basis throughout the summer. So we decided that this would be the furthest upstream location where we could put one of those temperature monitoring probes and yet still have the creek remain wet throughout the summer. A second monitoring point down here, and this is actually below the confluence with San Vicente Creek. So right there's an easy access point, and that's also a historical downstream monitoring station for other timber harvests in the area, so we'll have some background data on that point. 3 turbidity monitoring stations, so again, those are storm event based, 1 each at the up and downstream locations where we're having temperature, another at the bridge crossing, the proposed bridge crossing site. The red is where we're proposing photo documentation, so here at that Class 2 crossing I was telling you about, and then another at the bridge location. And then as you can see here, there's a segment of road shaded in red and this entire segment of road shaded in red for videotape monitoring. And we feel that's where I noticed the issues with the road system, as in that first photo I showed you, along here and over here. And so this would be a more comprehensive look at what the conditions of the road are throughout the winter period. And then as in addition to the monitoring and reporting program that you have in your materials, based on a recommendation from public comment, we're recommending adding 2 more stations, one for temperature and one for turbidity, right in the southern portion of the property. The public comments made the point that stations down here could have some dilution, so to speak, from the confluence with the San Vicente Creek. So if these sites show elevated temperature or elevated turbidity, it could be a cause of the San Vicente Creek. Or same thing if they were low, it could be blamed on the influence from San Vicente Creek. So we wanted to make sure that we capture the influence of the timber harvest plan, and we feel that we can adequately do that by adding a turbidity and temperature point right in that location. So finally, a little bit more about the site-specific conditions that I was mentioning earlier. There's 3 I've added for your consideration. The first is condition E, and you'll find these in your individual waiver, that the forester or the discharger contact the water board staff concurrently when they notify a California Department of Forestry of their commencement of operations. And this allows me a better time schedule for when to schedule my inspections in case I want to go out there during their active inspections, or at least I know when they began and when they ended. The next 2 conditions are a result of a recommendation from this board during my last presentation that I do a file review of all the field inspections conducted by the review team, and if there was any recommendations that didn't make it into the final plan, we wanted to see them in our order. And so condition Q is a recommendation that any through-cut roads, so those are roads with cut banks on both sides, so they're confined and they're channelized, that the discharger do an evaluation of all their through-cut roads on their property, and if they find any areas where they might be contributing to sediment to watercourses, that they improve those. And finally, condition R, if they're falling trees near a wet area, they must directionally fall the trees away from the wet area instead of into the wet area.
Do you mean by wet area a creek, or what are you talking about?
A creek or a marsh, some kind of a soppy area. Does that answer your question? Okay. So as far as public comments, we received one letter prior to the date. Let me back up. When I distributed the staff report to the public, I gave a date of when they could receive, if they provide written comments to us, that I could respond in writing. We received one letter from David Kosick, who asked that we withdraw the order until we've conducted an erosion assessment. And by we, and he recommended it could be the discharger. I'm not sure exactly what the extent of the erosion assessment would be from his point of view, but as I point out in the supplemental sheet, we have a multitude of conditions within the timber harvest plan and within the individual waiver that require the discharger to address erosion issues and correct them immediately. So I feel that it's appropriate to continue with the order in the absence of a comprehensive erosion assessment of that area or the sub-watershed or whatnot. The second comment we received from the public was from Ms. Jody Frediani, who requested that we issue waste discharge requirements in lieu of the individual waiver. And we've accomplished many things through the individual waiver that are protective of water quality and do not fall short of where waste discharge requirement would fall. And the individual waiver is every bit as comprehensive as the waste discharge requirement. So again, I feel it's appropriate that we proceed with the individual waiver. And finally, in a last-minute submittal last Sunday, the letter from Steve Schemick, and that's also in your materials that we distributed this week. I believe it's the letter that says Coast Keeper in the letterhead. Steve Schemick made some requests about the monitoring program, and he had the site-specific request about adding the monitoring stations in the southern portion of the property, and I felt that that was appropriate, and as you see, I've added that as part of the recommendations. The rest of his recommendations were more programmatic, and as we discussed earlier in item 21, we'll be coming back in July to discuss the program and the monitoring and any appropriate revisions, so I'm going to save his comments for the programmatic update. So I believe that the public comments have been appropriately addressed for the specific site. So finally, just to point out some of the amendments or the things that have changed since the materials in your packet were distributed to you, some of the language in the order have been moved to findings. So in the individual waiver, the first section is the findings and the second section is the order. So there were particular statements in the order section that have been moved to the findings, but none of the language has been changed as far as those go. But if you want to look in your waivers, conditions 1M, 2 through 6, and 10 have been moved to the more appropriate findings section. And in finding number 6, 13269, we've added some language about why we feel that the individual waiver is an appropriate tool for regulating the site as opposed to waste discharge requirements. And I can go into detail about that language if you like. And as I had mentioned before, we added two monitoring locations to the area. So in conclusion, we recognize that this is a critical watershed. It's 303 delisted watershed for sediment impairment. There are state and federally listed endangered species within the watershed, although the waiver does not authorize taking of any of these endangered species, along with many other sensitive beneficial uses. But we feel that the individual waiver is appropriate with all of its conditions, as well as the associated monitoring and reporting program, which has been designed to monitor and have an enforceable individual waiver that's protective of water quality. So therefore, I recommend that we approve the order with the changes that I highlighted. And that concludes my presentation. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Mr. Briggs.
I wouldn't normally jump in front of the board members, but as an extension of the staff report, I guess, could you put up the language that you mentioned as the second change?
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks.
I have it on my flash drive. We'll take one moment to pull it up.
Okay. I just wanted to try to get that on the screen. So,
sure.
Questions?
Mm-hmm. Gary?
Yeah. While you're doing that, I just have one question.
Sure.
Did you get any contact or were they notified? Let me ask you this. Was the Davenport County Sanitation District notified of this timber harvest plan? Or who is it that has that intake? That
the county operates that.
Yeah.
Water
so is the county
plant.
Notified of the timber harvest plan?
Of the timber harvest plan, I don't know. I can't speak to the timber harvest plan and the notification process of that. But I know the county was notified of our.
Okay, well that's what
waiver.
I mean then.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm getting too detailed in your question.
Yeah, just
taking you too literally.
Yeah. Did the county get anything on this from us?
Yes.
Get anything? Yes. Yes.
I was trying to be more general.
Yes, they did. Yes.
Okay, and did they respond in any way? Did they make any comments on this?
No, the only comments were from those three folks that
okay.
I mentioned.
That's all I wanted to know. Thanks.
At that site, does the county do any water quality monitoring?
Yes.
At the intake?
Yes, they do.
And they do turbidity?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Dr. Press?
Before, maybe I can just...
Yeah, go ahead.
Not to interrupt the board, but that's not going to work. I have the language pulled up that we've added. So it's this under finding number 6. It's this information that it's not letting me highlight. But the new information starts with the water board finds all the way down to the therefore. You can see why maybe I didn't include
it. This was something I suggested to add because under the Water Code 13269, the water board is supposed to make a finding of why they are issuing a waiver rather than waste discharge requirements. And so this finding addresses that issue.
Dr. Press.
Yeah. Couple questions. Julia, did you produce the GIS that you were showing us?
Yes.
How long did it take you to do that?
That seems like a simple question, but... overall, it took a few hours to get it all packaged into the presentation.
I was going to say the road layer and the skid trails and all that must have been. Did you get those from the from some of the foresters? I mean, how would you, or did you digitize all that yourself?
Well, the part that you're talking about, I believe, and let me pull it up to make sure that we're talking about the same map.
You have a GIS of the plan of the property with not that one.
Not that one?
No. Mm-mm. That one with all the skid trails and, I mean, it's a lot of digitizing, too.
Well, this part right here, when it comes in like that... So what you're looking at here is GIS, is the footprint and the contour lines. But these lines that come in here, I've done in PowerPoint, and I draw with the sketch
tool. The skid trails, too?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I watched the historical board meetings from presentations, and I really take it to heart when you all talk about how you can't be out into the field, and it's
yeah.
hard to just see with the black and white. So I sketch it in to give you an idea, to punch it out.
So all those roads, the historical roads and skid trails that have been in this plan in the past, you took off of a map and drew in basically freehand?
Correct.
Okay.
This is a little more of a cartoon. It shouldn't be meant
yeah.
to...
Yeah. I'm asking you this because I'm trying to... This is very valuable. This is an individual waiver, it's coming before us. Obviously, you wouldn't do this for all timber harvest reviews.
Absolutely not.
No, I understand. I understand. But even for this level of review, I wanted to know just how much effort it took. And I guess if you're doing it in PowerPoint rather than trying to digitize, or if you had had the layers already from the from Big Creek or somebody else, then it would have been easier. Anyway, just so.
So for this particular slide, I was fortunate enough that I have a volunteer, Parker, drew in all the lines, and then I was able. And how many hours did it take you to do that, Parker?
16 hours? Well,
so it took him a couple days to get it all in, and then
I thought so.
I was able to refine it, I'm glad to hear that it's valuable, that we're spending that
time. It's greatly valuable, and it's even more wonderful that you had a volunteer in doing
it. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to have him.
How can you clone him? Okay. The other question I had, is this, it looks like there are a lot of steep slopes here. Is this mostly cable yarding the wood out of the
it's a combination of tractor and cable area, but I don't know what the majority is.
Okay, maybe we can
I can look up the map that,
or we can hear from the forester.
We could hear from the forester.
We have a card.
Okay, but
he's going to come up.
All right, I just don't want to take his time with my question.
Well, you could ask him.
Okay, I'll wait until he comes up and I'll ask him. Thank you.
Ellis. We have a number of cards on the... No, public forum. Public forum. Okay. Should we go to cards? Okay.
Yep, Rick,
go to cards. Gary Paul, Lewis Schiffer, Kevin Collins, and Steve Shemek.
Good afternoon, members of the board, Chairman Young. Appreciate the opportunity to be able to address you. I'm Gary Paul. I'm the registered professional forester that prepared the plan. I'm the forest manager for CEMEX, who owns RMC Pacific Materials. It's not a former entity. It's still an existing entity. I've been the forest manager since 2001, and I've been a registered professional forester since 1978. And I want to start out by saying that we admit that we erred in starting operations without the approved waiver. And the reasons for doing this were that we had numerous delays in the timber harvest plan approval process, caused many respects by reopening the plan on several occasions for public comment. We originally applied for this harvest plan in November of 2005, and after two approvals in January and May, which were subsequently rescinded because of the necessity to open the plan for public comment, was finally approved on June 26th of 07. In the process, we had voluntarily given up our operations in the winter period at the request of the Davenport Sanitation District, so that operated to shorten our seasons to October 15th. We had expected to be issued a general waiver when we applied, and we thought it would be issued fairly soon, so we felt comfortable in starting and assumed we would be getting our waiver shortly. But as soon as we learned we were subject to an individual waiver, we terminated operations after 3 weeks in July. The waiver hearing was originally put off from an original September date to today. We voluntarily informed the board staff of our error and scheduled a field inspection on September 28th. Representatives of the regional board, Department of Fish and Game, County of Santa Cruz, and CDF inspected the area. No violations were found or impacts to water quality. We have had no water quality violations from our operations since I started managing the property in 2001. Secondly, the THP provides for many improvements in the infrastructure to reduce sedimentation. It may not be recognized by the board, but part of our tasks in preparing harvest plans is to identify potential and actual erosion and sedimentation sites and prepare mitigation measures addressing these sites. These measures provide a net benefit in reducing potential sedimentation. Ms. Dyer mentioned a culvert that we're replacing with a bridge, and in 2003 we discovered that this culvert had a failing fill. I'm wondering if I could proceed. I don't have a huge amount, but
if you could wrap it up, that would be great.
Okay. All right. We replaced it on our own, removed a failed fill in a culvert. We're doing upgrades in road rocking that weren't required when this area was last logged in 1991. We're rocking about 2,500 feet of road, including 800 feet in the Wilpez. We're abandoning 1,000 feet of existing skid trail that was used in the 1991 harvest within the Wilpez of the Class 1, and we're abandoning about 1,000 feet of existing road in the Wilpez in favor of cable logging to a ridge above and allowing these roads to revegetate along the streams. And to answer Mr. Press's question, it's a small amount of cable yarding as opposed to tractor yarding, and it's not as steep as it might appear on the map. And in addition, three Class 1 water course crossings used in 1991 will not be reopened.
Mr. Paul, what's your position with respect to staff's recommendation?
I agree with it.
Okay. All right.
It's enough.
that would be enough. Yeah. If you had some individual concerns about it, then, you know, I would want to hear those. But I think that's really what we want to hear from you.
Okay.
You know, if there's any specific problems with it. A question I have for staff is, you know, we find people in violation of laws when they don't submit a report.
Right.
They do something without a permit. I'm just curious to hear what your response is to a timber harvester proceeding without a permit.
Well, the way it's been explained to me, and Francis can correct me because I'm not an expert on this, we had some timber operations where they did proceed without the permit, but they had already submitted the application or the notice of intent, and we had issued them notices of violation for their operations. So we were going back through that process again in this case, but it was explained to me that I was not able to issue a notice of violation because there was nothing that they violated. There was no order in place. And so in order to proceed with enforcement, I had to conduct an inspection, and if I could find where any evidence of a discharge, then we could proceed with enforcement based on the water code. So the harvested area, about 35 acres, was adjacent to a water course, and I walked the full length of that water course, and I found in one location some sawdust in a water course, but not in amounts that would mean detriment to beneficial uses. So it was at that point I discussed the situation with my supervisors, and we decided that since this plan was already under an individual waiver and we'd become speaking about it today, that to proceed with some kind of formal enforcement might be inappropriate considering the nature of the activity and our resources.
Okay.
Now, had they proceeded without submitting a notice of intent, I understand that's a different story. But since they had submitted an application, there's something to that.
Is that our standard now? They have to just submit an application and then go ahead and start harvesting?
It kind of gives that impression, which does make me uncomfortable.
Sort of.
But
yeah.
But when we've gone over all of our different options, it seems like we don't have many outside of enforcing, taking some kind of enforcement action based on the water code. Mm. And Francis, am I describing that appropriately? Is there something I'm missing?
No, as far as I can tell, you're describing it appropriately.
Okay.
I don't understand what part of permitting this is if you can operate without a permit. So are you saying that an NOI is effectively a permit?
No.
Okay, then what are we missing?
The main point is that It's the issue of a discharge.
But the premise of the waiver program and its alternative, a waste discharge requirement, is that there are conditions on operations that could produce a discharge.
I think the thing is, this is not a
You're
hearing.
Not on.
This is not a hearing to take an enforcement action, and I typically don't no longer advise the staff on enforcement, so I don't know the specifics of whether it was appropriate to do enforcement action or not, but if you give me a second, I can tell you what kinds of options there are for enforcement. But there is a peculiar thing in the water code, which is that if it's the Clean Water Act and you proceed without a permit, that's strict liability, and the board can take enforcement. If it's under the water code and you proceed without a permit, without waste discharge requirements, it's only a violation if we actually have requested in writing that the person have submitted the application. It's not strict liability. We first have to take a step to take enforcement. So there's and I don't know if that's the situation here or not, but there's just is a big difference between the Porter Cologne Act and the Clean Water Act in terms of enforcement for failing to have a permit.
Well, I think the concern that is being expressed here is that we don't want to the permit authority of this board to be ignored
and
flouted. So not that that's what happened, but we want to make sure that this doesn't set a precedent for other projects to just go ahead, submit an NOI, and then.
And especially given the fact that we're kind of under resourced. And there was already a request from Mrs. Moore this morning that harvesters be allowed to go ahead and harvest without their permit being issued. I kind of see now a little bit more how that dovetails into maybe this particular THP. And I'm just concerned that it would set up the precedent so that people could go ahead and start and then just take their chances later with a site inspection as to whether we could prove that there was a threat to water quality. So, Mr. Briggs?
Yeah, I mean, it's fortunate that there weren't more significant problems here, but I think the bigger issue is that, as you said, Mr. Paul, you've been a registered forester and been working in the business for 30-some years, right?
Yes.
And you've been involved with our board actually adopting the general waiver in the first place. So it's not like you're uninformed in terms of the process. So, it seems to me you can't claim ignorance in terms of the rules of the road. And so I think the bigger issue is that we've got a program, not just this program, but virtually all of our programs, where we're talking about monitoring and taking actions that are appropriate for protecting water quality, as is based on trust. It's based on an honor system. That's what's required for self-monitoring, is that we trust that the discharger is going to be doing the monitoring in the right location at the right time and submitting valid data. That requires trust. You're actually submitting that under penalty of perjury. And so when you knowingly violate a term, whether it's monitoring or in this case conducting operations without approval, it certainly rocks, shakes the foundation in terms of that that whole framework that we have of an honor system and self-monitoring and a relationship of trust. So that's not good. I was very pleased that when you came forward today, the first thing you did was acknowledge that you made an error. That goes a long way as far as I'm concerned. But it's, like I say, I think there's a bigger issue in terms of shaking the trust in terms of following through with all aspects of the program.
I don't want this to set a precedent, though, Roger, that it's nothing is going to happen if it happens again with another forester.
You know, it's this can't happen. You ought to wait like everyone else for their permit to be issued. As frustrating as that might be, those are the rules that you got to abide by.
I agree.
Anyway, we have to leave it up to staff to decide how to deal with this and respond to it appropriately. Because I don't want anyone else thinking that this is okay or that nothing will happen if it's repeated.
Chairman Young, if I could say something. This is Matt Thompson. You know, I'm the new supervisor in Timber. But I came out of the enforcement unit, spent some time there, and I want to assure you that we will not hesitate to take formal enforcement action if appropriate in the future. If this, I, too, am very concerned about the precedent that harvesting prior to approval could set.
But not now. You're not going to do it now. What is it, one free pass, and then the industry's on the hook, or what?
Certainly not one free pass, and I want to echo that the frustrations I'm hearing from the board are shared by myself on the staff level. It's a very frustrating catch-22 when I have a consultation with my supervisors and legal counsel, and we talk about all of our different options, and none of it seems quite appropriate, and yet we're going to be setting this precedent. On one hand, Mr. Paul was discussing how the original date that we were hoping to get this before you was in September, and part of the reason it was delayed was because of this inspection. I had to go on the inspection, and I wasn't in lieu of preparing for an individual waiver. And so in some regards, considering our limited resources, I have to take these on a case-by-case basis, and Matt Thompson mentioned, we wouldn't hesitate to take enforcement if appropriate. We didn't see in this situation how it would be appropriate other than setting the precedent. But, for instance, had the eligibility criteria categorized this plan as a general waiver, I could consider elevating it to individual waiver, and the forester would have to come and explain to this board why they decided to proceed with their harvest without a waiver. So that's one of our options.
Well, or furthermore, because Roger was talking about the sort of the foundation that this is based on, you get into a vicious cycle where if this started to happen, then this board would probably look at its eligibility criteria all over again, and then we'd be back to forced to raise the accountability and the oversight, and so things would get a lot slower. So I think if it's true that there's the water code really does make it difficult for you to act on enforcement, there are other ways in which life could get harder, and those other ways involve more oversight, more monitoring requirements, more inspections, and that just would really slow things down. So I hope we don't go to that level, but that's
another option we have. If this is turning to be a chronic issue, maybe we would reevaluate the program and say this program isn't working as it's set up and modify the way we regulate timber to address it.
I'm sort of bothered by the fact that this wasn't just, you know, someone's error made because they didn't know what the rules were. This is someone who made a decision to go ahead in spite of knowing what the rules were.
It bothers me, too.
I think, we have some other options, too. Can we move this up to a WDR? I mean, is that a possibility?
Yes, it's a possibility, but as I discussed in the presentation, I don't know what that would accomplish that we're not already accomplishing individual.
The conditions of the waiver are equally enforceable as conditions
okay,
of the waste
so
discharge requirements.
Okay. Well, then the other thing we could do is just, you know, we could just deny the permit.
That's
also
an option.
And tell them to come
back
next year.
Yeah, that's an option.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Burlage, I hope I know you're in the back of the room. I hope you hear all this and that it's not lost on the rest of the foresting community that it would just be helpful not to have this ever repeated again. Because I don't want us to have to spend time to revisit the matrix and to start taking steps that would make it more restrictive, you know, for you to do what you know, the community would like done in terms of harvesting. But there's just a level of frustration we're expressing on having this happen when certainly, you know, Mr. Paul has been through this with us from the beginning and knows all the ground rules. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next speaker is Lewis Shipper, Kevin Collins, and then Steve Shimmick.
Chairman Young, board members, I'm Lewis Shipper. I'm with CEMEX, the landowner of the subject timber property. We've been managing this property now as a selected cut harvest for the last 60 years. With Mr. Paul's organization and a multitude of previous foresters since, I believe, it was 1952. You know, this came about from the simple fact that back in the 1940s, this area was devastatively burned, and that before that there was no management of the timber harvest, the timber lands in that area. A prime example of what happens when you leave something go. This is when the predecessor of the company decided that they needed to have the land managed. This operation actually is smart wood certified with the rainforest alignment, and also we provide water. And this is something that I wanted to clear up with a statement that Julia made that's not quite correct. We provide water to the town of Davenport. We began providing water in about the 1907 to 1910 area. Unfortunately, those records are lost. The water take is not the county's. It's actually our water take. The county's water take is actually at our plant site, and the samples that they take are actually at their treatment facility. And which is a blend of both this water take and another. They actually receive water from two of our takes. But going on, when we found out that there had been activity on the site without having a general waiver, and it was assumed that it would be a general waiver, it was instantly stopped. We had a meeting with the county in September. In preparation to the site visit that was made by all agencies at that time with the county, matter of fact, to Mr. Richter, we agreed to do a complete erosion assessment of the entire property. We engaged a firm that was recommended both by the county and with consultation with staff as being an appropriate firm, that is Pacific Watershed Associates. They were to actually start their work. They deferred their work from September time until they asked us if they could have additional time to move on into January or February. Unfortunately, their time constraints are such that we were unable to get a hold of them. They've now agreed that on April the 1st, they will begin their assessment and will begin in the area of any timber harvest that will be taking place. I do have a email from one of their principals, that is confirming or going by this. At this point, being my time is up, I'll make myself available at the pleasure of the board to answer any questions, particularly concerning the water take and exactly who has responsibilities and water rights in that area.
Are you in favor of staff's recommendation?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Any questions? Okay. Mr. Collins?
Chairman Young, I need to clarify something regarding the intake.
Okay.
Mr. Shawcross had asked if the county had commented on this particular plan.
Okay.
We had notified them of this plan, but earlier in 2005, this plan was proposed, and the district engineer at the Davenport County Sanitation District of the County of Santa Cruz did submit a letter, and that is a part of the supplemental sheet. So yeah. I wanted to make sure you saw that.
I saw that, but since that was 3 years old, I wondered if they had commented more recently.
They haven't commented on my proposed individual waiver, and I'm not aware of any more recent comments.
So you guys just put this in. The county didn't resend it or anything.
No, actually, and that was an attachment to one of the comment letters on my item from.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay,
right.
Okay.
That's a historic comment.
Okay, Mr. Collins.
Good afternoon, Kevin Collins, Lawn Pico Watershed Conservancy. I'm going to talk about this somewhat more broadly. San Vicente Creek is, in my opinion, the most heavily industrially impacted watershed in Santa Cruz County. As you heard, modern logging operations began in the 1950s. It would be useful. I've always thought that some of the people who live in that area who don't have the time to do this map all the skid trails from the beginning of CDF's recording of them in the 1970s after the passage of the Zeeberg-Nedgely Forest Practice Act, because those maps exist. They're in paper form, not GIS, but you would actually be able to see the skid trails that were cut in the past, the roads, that may not be used now, but in many cases are still a problem for channeling water and increasing sediment discharge. When the Lawn Pico THP appeal was heard before the Board of Forestry, the County of Santa Cruz appealed that plan to the Board. It was denied. It was a remarkable decision. The Board of Forestry denied that plan on the principle that in a 303D watershed, you can't approve a project that will increase sediment discharge. And that was the reason for the Board's ruling, the Board of Forestry's ruling. And the timber industry was stunned. This was not a court decision, and the effect of that decision was isolated to that individual case. But it demonstrates what the law actually states, and that's that you can't approve these projects in listed impaired watersheds if the plan is going to increase sediment discharge. Now, the deputy director of the Board of Forestry, answering questions from the board at that hearing, was unable to state that the Lawn Pico plan would not increase sediment discharge. It was a helicopter plan primarily on high and extreme erosion hazard terrain, but the property had not been logged in essentially about 100 years. This plan has been sent back two times, perhaps three times, by CDF for inadequate information, and the extensions had to do with once CDF modifies the plan, they have to reopen it for public comment. CMEX is an international, multinational corporation. Nobody is going to lose their college education or their opportunity for a liver transplant if this plan is not approved. That's just sort of a sarcastic joke for some of the things I've heard about previous problems people got with their waivers. I think that it really would be prudent to wait for the sediment source inventory. If it's done under the Fish and Game Protocol, that's actually an established process that Fish and Game has in place. And I'd like to point out just with my last few seconds, that I'm on the County Fish and Game Advisory Commission. It's pretty clear that coho salmon are now extinct south of San Francisco. They did not return to Scott Creek this winter. That was the last existing year class. And NOAA may be able to revive them from a couple captive fish and tanks in their lab in north Santa Cruz County, but I really doubt it. So our beneficial uses continue to plummet. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Steve Shemek.
Thank you, Ms. Dreyer. Chair Young, members of the board, staff, my name is Steve Shemek, Monterey Coast Keeper. The facts are very clear on this timber harvest. The area of the operation is 535 acres, less than a square mile. San Vicente Creek is a 303D listed waterway due to sedimentation siltation, with silviculture mentioned as one of the probable causes. San Vicente Creek provides habitat for listed populations of steelhead and coho. There's a water supply intake lower on the creek, and I guess I would kind of characterize the water as a public resource not owned by CEMEX. The plan area contains over 30 water course cross road crossings, two skid trail crossings, and 34 landings. This plan does not qualify under the board's general permit due to high cumulative effects ratio and high drainage density. CEMEX has been problematic due to the numerous discrepancies. CDF ended the pre-harvest inspection early and just said we can't do it because things are too different from what, you know, was on paper to what they found in the field. Through the approval process, CDF rescinded their approval of this plan twice before providing a final approval in June 2007. Waters board staff found additional discrepancies, and on September 24th, CEMEX notified staff that they had gone ahead and logged. You should not approve this timber harvest. Next slide, please. You can barely see this, but that's the area that we're talking about. Next slide. I took these pictures. As you can see, the mature trees, the timber is in the bottom of the watershed. Next slide. Here's what I think you should do. Here's my recommendations. These are things that I think you should. I think you should deny this permit. But in lieu of that, here's my recommendations for what you should add to the conditions of the permit. The things that are in bold are the things that I think are incredibly important. Monitoring should be conducted by a third party. Water board staff should place high priority on inspections. Monitoring reports should be filed in the fall and spring. Right now they're just in the fall. So in other words, if there's a problem over the winter, in other words, turbidity goes up, they have the whole next summer to continue operations. If you add just one additional reporting guideline, then we'll be able to catch if there's a problem. Triggers such as 10% increase in turbidity should be added. That would require CEMEX to notify the regional boards. Some of your permits have had triggers. This one does not. You should add those triggers. And I thank Ms. Dwyer for changing the or adding the monitoring station. I didn't know that until her presentation, and I do think that maybe it could even be better refined to be put at the bottom of the sail, but before any tributaries come in. So I hope that last monitoring station could be refined even more.
And are your suggestions based on solely on the conditions in the field with this THP, or are they somehow in response to them harvesting before getting a permit?
You know, part of this is, so thank you. You know, the monitoring being conducted by a third party, contracted with a third party, that's in direct response to the fact that they went ahead and logged and that there were so many discrepancies that CDF had to end the inspection, that there were discrepancies that Ms. Dwyer found. Throughout this process, the paperwork has not been good. And even there's a fish and game letter in the packet that some of the things that CEMEX was required to do on earlier permits, they haven't done. So I'm simply saying let's bring in a third party.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't have a card.
I submitted a card to Mr. Briggs personally. It was on item 21 also.
Right. And your name, sir?
My name is Dennis Davey.
Right.
I'm here as a representative of the Sierra Club Santa Cruz Group. I'm a member of the Forestry Task Force, and I'm also on the Executive Committee of the Santa Cruz Group. Miss Jody Frediani regrets that she cannot be here today and asked me if I would come and speak with the board about this timber harvest plan. First comment is that the county was concerned enough about this timber harvest plan to ask for the erosion assessment, as has been stated. And the second thing is, if you have any concerns about Mr. Paul's willful and deliberate starting of timber harvest plans, I suggest that you report him to the California Department of Forestry and object to the board that provides his professional license. I'd like to go back and speak a little bit about the history of San Vicente Creek. San Vicente Creek was the finest trout fishery in the Santa Cruz Mountains prior to 1900. I did this research. My wife is a historian. This research is online. I repeat, San Vicente Creek was the finest trout fishery in the Santa Cruz Mountains prior to 1900. Guides would bring fishermen from around the world here to fish. While small localized logging took place prior to 1849, after statehood, commercial logging began. In 1867, Davenport Landing provided the means to export forest products on a larger scale. Beginning in around 1905, railroads began to provide the capacity to ship very large commercial volumes of timber from this area. The 1907 earthquake multiplied the markets in San Jose, San Francisco, and the East Bay cities, required huge volumes of building materials to rebuild. World War I added to that demand. Shortly after this, the San Vicente Lumber Company was formed and logged many watersheds north of Santa Cruz. But by 1923, the entire San Vicente watershed and many others were clear-cut. Only 30 years later, mechanized logging began and has continued to the present day. The San Vicente watershed is the most highly impacted watershed anywhere in the Central Coast region. The entire harvestable area of the watershed has been logged in the last 20 years. The city of Davenport relies on San Vicente Creek for its drinking water. The filtration system is not usable during the rainy season due to high sediment loads, and the citizens must either use bottled water or boil water before use. The 303D listing states that silviculture is the source of the high turbidity. This listing also states that endangered anadromous fish, steelhead and coho salmon, are being impacted by the forestry discharges along with the drinking water. The sediment discharge during high water flow is consistent with logging, especially in Class 3 watercourses, as these are the streams that flow during heavy rainfall. Class 3 watercourses constitute the greatest source of areas drained, say in San Vicente Creek. Cal Fire THPs have lower logging and WILPES requirements near Class 3s, but logging roads and skid trails are very common in these areas. The Clean Water Act requires that impacted streams be cleaned up. Just because San Vicente Creek does not yet have TMDLs is no reason why the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board should not start cleaning up San Vicente Creek. The staff recommendation will not provide for significant reductions. The proposed waiver in the THP are going to continue the current high sediment loads. In fact, reporting of discharges will not take place until and if sediment loss is observed. The Sierra Club urges the board to deny the waiver at this time. We request that a comprehensive erosion assessment of the entire watershed be done before any waste discharge requirement or waiver is issued.
Can you wrap it up, please?
I'm wrapping up, sir. We believe that a reduction of the number and extent of roads most used for logging must occur. The reduction of the size and the longer reentry times of THPs for logging must also occur before the reduction of sediment will be realized. Greater protection of watercourses, especially Class 3s, is needed to prevent sediment from entering the water. The Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board should require actual sediment reductions in anticipation of the setting of the TMDLs by
Thank
the landowners wanting
you
to continue
comments.
Logging operations.
Thank you for your comments. Time's up.
Can I finish my sentence, sir?
I gave you lots of time, but I was hoping that when I said, can you wrap it up, that it was two or three conclusory sentences. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Let's work together to return the San Vicente Creek to its former status as a world-class fishery. Thank you.
Okay. Last speaker. There's two more. I don't have cards. Mr. Van Lennep. Okay.
I did submit a card. I don't know where it disappeared
okay.
to. But, Chairman Young, members of the board, good afternoon. David Van Lennep, Redwood Empire Sawmills. I'd like to urge the board to approve the CMEX waiver as proposed by staff at this time. Staff has required a full suite of monitoring on this plan area. I think that, in conjunction with other monitoring data, will be good in the long term and for analysis of how timber operations are conducted in this particular area. CMEX has agreed to no winter operations in addition to an extensive sediment, a voluntary sediment erosion control assessment on the property. I'm personally familiar with the property and have seen firsthand the good long-term forest stewardship that occurs on the property as a whole. I would also like to point the board to a good indicator of the health of San Vicente Creek, at least in the upper portions of the watershed, to a landlocked resident trout population that is still in existence, probably on its own since about 1900, if the water quality was so degraded coming out of that area, there would probably not be any of that landlocked trout population left. It's not receiving any anadromy past a significant fish barrier down much lower in the watershed. Again, I would like to urge the board to approve the waiver so that CMEX can proceed with their plan.
What about the coho salmon in the lower reaches of this watershed?
Well, certainly those salmon could return up to that fish barrier. There's considerable other impacts below the anadromy barrier and below where timber is being harvested. The anadromy barrier, as I understand it, is a site of an old quarry, one of the first quarry sites for limestone for the property, and there's a considerable barrier there. Below that, there's a number of different potential impacts, I suppose. Was the question, could they run up, or?
Well, we just heard testimony that there is no more coho, and what I recall is that there were only one of three year classes even left over the past few years, that we were down to one out of the three, and now it sounds like that last one is gone.
I wouldn't dispute that, only that there's development, water intake, there's other things going on at the bottom, and I was merely trying to isolate this upper trout population as a potential indicator, not being subject to ocean conditions or other right. other factors such as the coho that are anadromous. Right. This population is landlocked and entirely sufficient on the water that comes out of this area. That was merely my point.
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. I just want to ask you to help me understand your comments about long-time stewardship. I'm assuming you reviewed the staff report, and on page 4, specifically there's a sentence at the end of the second paragraph noting that the Water Board staff found on their inspection problems with the infrastructure, including roads, skid trails, and landings, to be poorly drained and generally in poor condition, which doesn't agree with what you just characterized as long-term good management, good stewardship practices. So I'm just curious about your views in contrast with what staff actually saw.
Not having seen exactly what staff had seen, only going from the photos and tying into staff's comments that there was no actual discharge. There is considerable road infrastructure. There are things that happen. I would point towards the program that CMEX has been on and previous landowners of trying to rectify unnecessary segments of road, culverts and crossings that have not been upgraded or that are constantly being upgraded to more current standards like 100-year flow capabilities, the removal of a failing Class 1 culvert of their own accord, now to be replaced with a bridge. The property, as previous speaker mentioned, was subject to railroad logging, which was not done to any other standard than to find an appropriate gradient. So that railroad was located in places that were not conducive to good road management and sediment control. Those are, at least in my familiarity with the property, those were constantly being upgraded, old infrastructure being upgraded to more current standards. So in a microcosm, I wouldn't disagree with staff or say that those areas did not need to be maintained and did not need some additional attention, but in an overall sense, when you saw the aerial photographs from another previous speaker and considered that was clear-cut and burned 80, 90 years ago and then burned again some 30 years later, the property still, to my eye, looked to be well-stocked and certainly did not did not appear to be in a bad condition of management. And again, I have not seen every corner of the property in many years, but I am familiar with the things that are being incorporated in the biannual or so harvest plans that continue to upgrade road infrastructure, remove unnecessary segments of road, the conversion of some of the logging areas to cable yarding, which has less of an impact than ground-based systems. So I would say in a long-term sense that they have been good stewards and they will continue to be good stewards, and that was the basis of my comment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Berlage?
Chairman Young, members of the board, Bob Berlage, Big Creek Lumber Company. Our company has a contractual agreement and had a contractual agreement early in 2007 to purchase the logs from this timber harvest plan. And we had anticipated and actually programmed that into our work schedule for the sawmill and also our production of lumber that we sell in our 5 retail outlets. And it amounted, that particular sale amounted to 20% of our production. When we didn't receive that, we had, in second week of September, we had to run people in half shifts where a crew would come in for a week and then someone else would come in just so we could keep those guys working. And I merely say that to remind the board that there's a human element to all of this, that those people suffered economic hardship to a degree solely because we couldn't get those logs. And in no way am I insinuating that anyone on this board doesn't understand that, you know, there are implications with the stuff we deal with permits and these timelines. It's just that those people are never here. I'm sort of their spokesperson by default. And another thing that going on to decision-making process on your part, you know, we beg you not to deny this permit because we still have to factor that material in and our 250 employees depend on that. On the issue of frustration, clearly we can see here that it works both ways. And possibly in July, when we look at our concerns, it's equally valid for you, the board, staff, to say, okay, here's some stuff that isn't working for us. And there's no reason whatsoever that you can't include that issue of when does a person start relative to when a permit is issued. And I think that's important, too.
I don't think, though, that that's a gray area. That's my take on it.
Okay. Understood. Understood. But I'm really pointing out that there's an opportunity coming up. Couple of quick things. The assessment that's been referred to by some of the people here and the need for that to be completed before these people get to restart their operation, remind you that that assessment and the agreement to do it was completely voluntary on the part of the applicant. And if that isn't done, there's still a tremendous amount of monitoring and regulation oversight. A couple of other things. I don't know how much time I have left, but, you know.
If you can wrap it up with a few sentences.
Okay, fine. It can be very frustrating for us, all of this. You know, we get a lot of criticism, but I would proffer that what you're seeing right there in that aerial photo is 50 years of selective harvesting following massive clear cuts and burning that preceded that. And if you put that in contrast to the picture you see in the back there, it's very difficult for us to concede that that is the most highly impacted watershed in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody has.
Thank you for your comments.
I have a question.
Mr. Shallcross.
Hello. You want to come back? So
I thought I could get away.
That's okay. I appreciate your comments about the folks you had to send home or
And so I want to ask you about that a little bit. So in September, when you thought you were going to have these trees coming in, you got these guys lined up to work. Is that how it works? Or?
Well, to the best degree possible, long before that, in the winter preceding, so that would have been 2006, early 2007, we try and lay out our workload for the remainder of the year. Our mill processes between 11 and 14 million board feet. All of those come from similar projects or mostly smaller projects, and this we have to juggle all of those, get the various permits, have them in place, and then we start and work our way through the season. Hopefully by the end of the year we have enough material for everybody to keep working until our normal maintenance shutdown, which occurs mid to late December, and then we've got a little bit of inventory left over, and we try not to get too much of that either, because we have to pay taxes on it so that they can get started and have some, the mill workers have something to work on until we get the first logging permit and can start in the spring. So I don't know if that answers
I'm still confused. I'm trying to figure out how this particular, the fact that this guy didn't get his permit in September affected your business. I guess specifically, how did that work?
It's a fifth of his contract for the year, isn't it?
Okay.
Isn't that it?
I'm talking about this particular timber harvest.
I think I get the question now. So okay. In late 2006, early 2007, we knew how far along in the CDF permitting process this particular project was, and were able to anticipate, based on past experience, that this was going to be approved, which it was. It got pulled back on a technicality, but reapproved with no changes in June. And it was very, but our decision was early prior to that, that we knew the plan was going to be approved from CDF because many of the issues had been resolved. So that's how we operate. We're going, okay, this one's going to fly. It's not going to require 2 years of marbled Merlot surveys, et cetera, et cetera. This is a 2007 plan. We can go ahead and put it in the docket. The volume, the total volume off that project was 20% of our designated volume for the mill for the year 2007.
I see. Okay. So it wasn't based on anyone saying, okay, now the timber's coming in today. I mean, how does that work?
No. It's not that nebulous because we have contractors that we have to line out. We anticipated in January when it was first approved that that project was going to be operated on in midsummer. Then when it went to June, we actually had to do some juggling estimates of when the material is going to arrive at the mill and run it through. So we had to do some juggling and get some other jobs started earlier. But the net effect at the end of the year is we hope to get 11 to 14 million board feet.
I guess what my concern is, and maybe it doesn't affect what your end of the deal, is that it occurs to me that, you know, with timber harvesters, or maybe some timber harvesters, who think they're getting the lowest level, the general waiver, maybe this is becoming standard practice that they go ahead and start before they get the waiver. And so that would be a concern. And I realize that doesn't have to do anything to do with you at that, in this job, but
right. We, our involvement in this particular project was simply as the purchaser of the material.
Okay, thanks.
I think I understand what your fear is, Mr. Shallcross. I can guarantee you, we would never propose or anticipate that we were going to receive logs based on an inadequately permitted process.
Okay, good.
If I were to propose that,
okay, You didn't even have to say it. I had a feeling that was the case. But
anything else?
No.
Thank you. Okay, Steve Shemek.
He already spoke.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a comment? I wanted to just comment that this is not a hearing on the enforcement of a violation of the waiver or of harvesting without a permit. And I just want to caution that denying a waiver is not a remedy for and there's no evidence that there actually was a violation other than that statement. That's actionable under the water code. So I was concerned.
Right. And my reaction is that also, that, you know, this is water under the bridge. Hopefully this is not going to happen again. And although Mr. Shemek did put up a number of things that he felt were kind of important potential additions to the permit, I would just leave it up to staff's, you know, opinion on whether any of those should or shouldn't be incorporated. Your time is really limited in dealing with this overall program. I don't want to see you burdened any more than you are. But maybe there are some good ideas there that you feel would be worthwhile to incorporate. Between now and July. But that's just kind of my question to staff about what we've heard from public comment.
I think there are good ideas, and as I mentioned before, I think that it's the most appropriate time to address them is in July when we reevaluate the program.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think that that Mr. Paul has put us in a very uncomfortable situation, and I know counsel has said we're not in an enforcement action right now, I, for one, really resent being put in the position of wondering if the board is board's rules and regulations are being respected on the one hand, and then on the other, being reminded of the economic and labor impacts of this project not going forward. It's a really unfair place to put us in, and it was your responsibility, not ours. And I want to be clear about that. I've never voted against a timber harvest plan request, a permit request, a conditional waiver, general waiver, because I always thought that we could work out a proper monitoring, proper public accountability, and you folks from the timber industry know this. I have always supported it, and I'm the environmental studies professor. All right, so I'm very mindful that this is something based on trust, and when I saw this, I really wondered where this was going. So I just want to be put the industry on notice that back in July we're going to be looking at this again, and you know we'll be taking a hard look at it. But if this were to come again, this if we heard this sort of situation come again, I would just request that we stop the proceedings and that we would ask counsel for a way of turning it into an enforcement action, and just halting continuing it till another hearing, as long as it took. So I'm not happy, but I understand that it's not the moment for an enforcement action. So, I agree with the chair about the staff's recommendations and having them, you know, trusting their judgment, but I really wanted to underscore my very strong displeasure at being put in this position.
Okay, Mr. Briggs.
I was wondering if you could put up Steve Shemek's slide again, please. The very first bullet up there at the top, it seems to me in light of, as I was talking about, the bigger picture as far as the issue of trust, and one of the key things is monitoring, because it's self-monitoring. I'm thinking that that first bullet makes a lot of sense, not for July for the generic case, but for this case. I don't think it would be punitive. I think it would be a logical outgrowth of what we've heard today. And I was wondering if Mr. Shipper, I wonder if that's something that you would be interested in volunteering to provide.
Well, for our purposes, it doesn't matter because this is a third party for us. You know, Mr. Paul is acting as a third party. We're not doing the monitoring ourselves.
Well, we're talking about a fourth party then.
Well, you know, but what I'm getting at is for our purposes, the effect here is not on us. We're already paying someone to do the monitoring. Mm-hmm. The effect here would be on Mr. Paul, because we would not be paying him to do the monitoring. We'd be paying another third party. So for our purposes, we do not have any objections to having, you know, another contractor in. That you know, as I said, we hired a professional forester to do the work. If we hire a laboratory group, or even if we send our own people out, because we do have trained people that can actually do this type of thing, but I don't know if we have the staff anymore because, of course, as we all know, there's more layoffs than there are hirings right now. So, you know, but for our purposes, this would not be a burden on us at all, and so there, I'd have no position to object to it.
Well, I guess what I'm suggesting is to have, I'll call it a fourth party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. It
provides,
what I'm just trying
provides
to point out,
oversight.
Yeah. What I'm trying
not,
to point
not
out
our
is
staff.
It's not our yeah, I know. it would not be something that I would have an objection to because, of course, you know, another party will charge us more, but what we're dealing with here is just money going into one pocket or going into another pocket. Ultimately, it all comes out of our pocket.
I think that would be a reasonable addition to the monitoring program.
Well, and maybe that fourth party, that third fourth party, could be somebody that that was vetted by staff and CEMEX.
Right.
That would be the logical way to do it. It seems to me.
Right.
Agreed upon by those two, by the staff and the landowner.
Right. And this we've done something somewhat similar where we've had dischargers pay for services, and then we've been able to select the experts or the consultants to assist us where we needed that expertise. And so I'm suggesting a similar model here for this one case.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you. Well, you have the list up from Mr. Shimmick. Julia, can you comment on the trigger he's proposing here, 10% increase in turbidity to be a factor notified to the regional board? Is that consistent, or how does that stand up with other timber harvest permits?
That's something that was in the individual waivers prior to July 2005. It wasn't something added as part of the general waiver program, and it does seem like an appropriate way to notify myself where the problem spots might be, because as Mr. Shimmick outlined, it's not until fall of the next year that I get the full report. So we can modify it to say whenever the turbidity units are more than 25 NTUs and the downstream station is 10% higher, that they call me. I think I'm amenable to that. I think it's a good idea and a good indicator that there might be something more at work in that location that needs attention.
Well, I would like to see that if that's something you can include.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have two additions there to the terms of the waiver, correct?
Yeah, can I make some suggestions on how to do it?
Sure.
A couple of simple insertions in the individual conditional waiver on page 6. There's a One of the conditions is J. It says the discharger shall not cause alteration in turbidity that exceeds basin plan requirements. We can pull the basin plan requirements into that condition, the numeric requirements, and add language such that if those turbidity requirements are exceeded, that the discharger immediately contact the executive officer. Under condition P, it says the discharger shall comply with all requirements of the executive officer pursuant to monitoring and reporting program, number 2008-13. We could simply add all monitoring shall be conducted by a third party approved by the executive officer. That's also on page 6.
Yeah, I was suggesting having a monitor, third-party monitor, so it may not be someone who's doing all the monitoring, but I think what I'd ask the board to do is give us the latitude to work with RMC to actually accomplish that.
That seems fine.
Mr. Shipper, did you have a comment about what's being proposed?
There is one caveat that I'd like to put in, and that's because I do know that finding this type of sampling people is extremely difficult. So, I mean, we've just had the situation where with the Pacific Watershed, where we were promised a bid and beginning in work in the first part of January and February, and maybe they're going to be here in April. So if we can work in something into this so that the lack of finding of an additional sampler, somehow we can work around that. I don't know exactly how to do that, but as I was sitting there, I was beginning to think, well, who are we going to get? And no one was jumping out at me, because particularly for the visual monitoring of walking all the roads, and things of that nature. So we could put some kind of something in there about the ability to actually get an outside monitoring.
How about just a different RPF?
Oh, that would be possible.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, our concern is that it was Mr. Paul that did this. And so using a different registered professional forester might be an appropriate solution to this.
I think if you put in the, you know, that is his decision to make, but if you put in into the section that Matt mentioned, that a monitor to require a monitor at the discretion of the executive officer, and that way if it really turns out to be really difficult to resolve that,
fine,
it could be, you know, not happen happen partially or, you know, whatever, pick the appropriate areas.
Okay. I'd prefer it wasn't another forester. Yeah, but, you know, really a third party. Someone not in the industry.
I mean, you were thinking of someone who sort of monitors how it's done and the parts that are important to be monitored.
Gary, if another one, Gary, if another forester followed in Mr. Paul's footsteps and did something that, you know, was not in compliance with the permit, with this plan, I think that there would be a lot of problems.
So let's not tempt them.
Well, listen,
it's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Any other
for changes?
Yeah.
We sum up our recommendation.
Yeah. And does the board have any other suggestions for inclusion? Okay. Go ahead.
Just to conclude, we fully understand that the San Vicente is a sensitive watershed. We use the eligibility criteria that you approved, and as a result, we have proposed the highest level of protection for this watershed. We are proposing enforceable site-specific requirements to protect the watershed and stringent monitoring to ensure those requirements are met. Your staff and those of other resource agencies are committed to inspecting the timber harvest activity when necessary and taking enforcement action if needed. We have carefully considered all interested persons' comments and, in fact, incorporated a change to the proposed monitoring program as a result. And we're, of course, accepting the changes you directed. We believe that we have struck the proper balance between the applicant's interests and the public's interest to protect the watershed. We therefore recommend approval of this conditional waiver. Thank you.
Okay. And Julia, you'll be taking photographs when you do your inspection of this THP?
Yes, as always.
Okay. There was another suggestion there to move this up to a high priority on your list, but you know, I'm sure you'll have your eyes and ears open when you revisit this site.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. All right, we have staff's recommendation. Do we have a motion? Mr. Hodges?
I would be happy to make a motion.
Okay.
That we adopt order number R3-2008-13 with the modifications as have been discussed. Staff has repeated part of that. We have two specific items that are to be added in, which we, I think, have been discussed adequately. And so I move adoption.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. First and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion carries with one no vote. All right. Thank you very much. We'll then do public comment.